Hello and welcome to the Selection Committee podcast, number 6 of such. And this is the first podcast where we don't have Dan Fisher on. My name is Monty, and the next voice you are going to hear is a voice familiar to listeners of the Coach's Box podcast. I get him on about once per year because that's about all I can stand. because he just showers me to tears, I'm sorry to say. But I'm glad that he's come in at the last minute to fill in for Dan this week. Footy Lover 18, how are you going?
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're on the good stuff, I'm sure. And, of course, you being an Essendon supporter, I'm going to be making pretty much every joke is going to be about Essendon this week.
Fair enough. I'm used to it by now. So
excellent.
Go for your life.
Good. Well, let's get right into it. Well, actually, before we get into the teams and what that means for private draft leagues like Ultimate Footy and the Supercoach Draft and AFL Fantasy Elite, I'd like to get your thoughts, Footy Lover 18, about the general way that the industry has been going. And, you know, if we don't necessarily want to talk inside baseball industry stuff, but just how you think the Ultimate Footy in particular, being that's a new product to a lot of people this year, and the virtual sports ones, how those products have gone this year. Do you think it's been a success?
I mean, I don't know the actual figures in terms of how many people are using it and that sort of thing, but this is the first year that I've used it, I must admit. And as someone that's had a lot of experience in other fantasy sports, namely, with regards to draft leagues, namely NBA, NFL, and a little bit in baseball as well, I'm a huge fan of the draft-style fantasy competition. Just simply having a player play on the weekend, and when they do well, you're the only one that benefits from it. I think it's far more rewarding than having Gary Ablett and he scores a 150 and literally 80% of 90% of people probably have him. I just don't understand any sort of fun in that, I guess.
It's been interesting how the chatter has gone between fantasy coaches I've been listening to over the last month or so. I'm included in the many thousands of fantasy coaches for whom this is the first time they've really got into a draft-style fantasy league using the current software. I mean, FanFooty ran one of those about 7 years ago, but this is obviously the most modern software we've got. I mean, the Ultimate Footy software is a lot like what the Yahoo software is.
Yeah, exactly. I thought the actual draft window on Ultimate Footy, there's a little bit of tinkering to do there. I thought there were some extra features that they could employ just to make the drafting aspect of the site a little bit smoother and a little bit more user-friendly. But the actual, now that the draft's over, the site itself, I think it's fine. As you said, it's clearly modeled on the Yahoo fantasy site.
Yep.
Yeah, the interface. And I think it's great, I must say. I haven't had any issues with it whatsoever, sending trades, all that sort of jazz. The layout's beautiful, so I think the product itself has been great. As I said, a couple of changes, very easy probably to do with regards to the draft, but other than that, it's been great.
Now, one thing I have been hearing from a lot of coaches, even those experienced in draft leagues as you and I are, and there's a lot of other coaches who've been playing AFL fantasy games for many, many years, but they've also been, as you have, playing NFL and NHL and MLB and all those other fantasy leagues from America, is that trading is a big part of those leagues in America. But even in leagues filled with experienced coaches who are all gung-ho about, I mean, perhaps it's because we are so gung-ho about it, we're actually a bit timid in our trading. And I'm not sure whether that's something that can be solved through software. I mean,
no, that's not a software issue. I think there's a couple of things with that. I think once as people get used to it, and I think you may not see as much this year, but next year I think you'll probably see a lot more people get involved and be a little bit more proactive with regards to trading. And not everyone needs to be gung-ho. I mean, you know, I'm very trade happy and that sort of thing, and that's not always served me well. But I do think that, look, if you're sitting on the bottom of your league and your team is not doing well, why would you just sit idly by and just watch yourself collect the wooden spoon? The great thing about these sorts of leagues is that you can potentially trade yourself out of trouble. You know, all it takes is one, maybe two great trades in your favor, and they're not easy to pull off, no question. But a couple of trades in your favor, and you can really turn the fortunes of your side around. Now, sometimes that might be. I mean, I drafted Brendan Goddard, for example, third overall. I've now had Sean Higgins and Matthew Pavlich and Cruiser go down with reasonably long-term injuries. Now, my side, needless to say, is going to be in a little bit of trouble. So I've got no problem. Now, everyone is always obsessed about getting the best player in a trade, but sometimes your side can be better off by putting up the best player and getting two pretty good players in return if your side needs to add a little bit of extra, you know, a couple of extra players. And as I said, you don't always need to get the best player in a trade. So open your eyes a little bit and see what the possibilities are. And sometimes you'll get a trade offer from someone, and it might not be the best trade offer in the world, but the idea is that they're letting you know that they're interested in a player from your side. Now, rather than just going reject and sending a note saying, you know, nice offer, dickhead, or something like that, perhaps you can send a counter offer, and it can be equally bad in your favor. But, you know, you continue that sort of dialogue, and somewhere along the line, you will meet in the middle, and you'll find a trade that you're both happy with. And my limited experience now, I mean, the season's still very young. The few trades that I've sent, and I admit they're not always the best of trades for the other person, but the idea is that you're just trying to get the dialogue started. So rather than just clicking reject offer, you know, you can send one back the other way and we'll get things going.
I do think that software and the things that the sites offer can help with confidence. I think this is a confidence thing. And I mean, you see in American leagues, there are entire websites devoted to, I mean, I know DT Insider, the blog I've been pumping up a bit on the show in the preseason, I think you've got something to do with it. They talked about value-based drafting, and there is obviously, I mean, there are websites in America, especially for the NFL, where you can enter in a trade, and it'll give you a point value for each, you know, a bit of the trade, and it'll tell you whether it's actually fair or not. I mean, you can have two scrubbers and one really good player plus a draft pick, and all these things have value, and you can, you know, so if we had that sort of thing in Australia, maybe then people might be more, or things like that, there's many of those sort of tools, people might be more confident that actually wouldn't get ripped off in these trades.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, bottom line is that, look, if you're starting some, you know, crappy player in your back line, then needless to say, you probably need to try and get a better backman. So, I mean, no doubt having a scientific method of going about it will add a little bit more confidence, but sometimes it's just a bit of common sense. And, you know, it's important to understand that sometimes if you want to get a great player, sometimes you have to give up a very good, you know, a great player, or at least two very good players. So, I guess trading is not about trying to rip someone off. It's really about, I mean, if you can rip someone off, great, but that's not really that easy to do. But it's really about trying to find a trade that's beneficial from both sides. So as I said, I've just had two of my key forwards go down, so I'm going to be in some trouble. But I've got Brendan Goddard, Luke Hodge, you know, Hamish Hartlett, all in my back line. So I'm going to have to now put up one of those guys to try and get a forward in return. So like I said, trading is not that difficult, but you've got to put away the fear of, oh, what will happen if this happens, or you know, am I getting ripped off? And rather than just watch your side go down the drain, try and do something about it.
Right. Well, I'm actually playing you in one of our leagues that we're in with Dan this week, Vanty. So I'm sure you'll get a win there. I'm actually one out of six from my two leagues with obviously three games played so far. I managed to get one win from bloke who scored the least in the league. So that is why I ask the questions and you guys answer them. So yes.
Well, I think you might get your second, well, one of your wins this week. As I said, I'm dealing with some injuries at the moment. But
I thought that at round one because I faced a bloke with, I think, Kelly, who was suspended, and Bartella, who was... No, not Bartella, someone else who was suspended. And he just wiped the floor with me. I think the projected score had me winning by 200, and I ended up getting beaten by 300 or something ridiculous like that. There's just no accounting for, should I say luck? No, that's
No, but that's no doubt about it. Luck, in all fantasy, luck has a huge part to play, and there's no shame in saying that, look, I won because I got lucky, or, you know, I lost because I got unlucky. I mean, that's just part of the game.
Mm. All right. Well, we'll get to the first. Well, I've got a list of players here because this is obviously what we do with the coaches box. We have a list of players and we roll through them like a steamroller. I thought we haven't been doing that on the selection committee, but I had a bit of time after the release of the teams at about 6:30 to actually get up a list of players. So they're not going to be the same sort of players we'll be talking about for salary cap competitions, obviously. The main differences are obviously that we're talking about players who are either injured now, who you have to make decisions about whether to trade them out or not, or stash them on your bench. And of course, the big difference with draft league games is that you haven't got that 2 weeks grace to make a decision on a player. You have to get them in the first week, if they're any good, because someone else might be able to get them and take them away from you. So the news, I suppose, from Ultimate Footy this week was that they made some player position changes, and I was looking through our leagues and only one of these players was not already owned, so I'm not sure there's that many decisions to make. But Mark Blickhouse was the only one who wasn't, is not owned in most leagues. He has gained ruck eligibility to his centre, obviously as the same as the virtual sports competitions had about a month ago. Yaron has also added forward eligibility to his back. Mullet, probably the most fantasy relevant one, so he was a centre and now he's added back. I mean, back depth seems to be the thing that's most in short supply in all these competitions. Reece Stanley also added back eligibility to his forward positioning, and Wingard added forward eligibility to his centre eligibility. Dixon added ruck to his back, and a couple of the Geelong small forwards, Motlop and Stokes, were centres, and now they're centres and forwards. So in terms of picking anyone off the waiver wire, I'm not sure that there's going to be anyone other than Blickabs who would be on the waiver wire. Vamsi, would you be suggesting that Blickabs might be worth a spot on a bench, or is he going to be out pretty soon?
Oh, I mean, I don't think he's going to be playing for too much longer. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly what the Geelong ruck injury situation is like, but surely once a couple of those guys are back, he's going to be out of the side. And to be honest with you, I mean, let's just say you're in a 10-team league, then and each team is starting one ruck, that's really only the top 10 rucks are really going to be startable. Now, therefore, you look at what the 10th most valuable ruck is, and they're going to probably, I don't know off the top of my head, but they're probably going to be averaging around about that 80 mark, probably 80 to 85 maybe. Now, Blickabs is averaging, mid-40s.
Less than 50. Yeah.
So he's not worth it. He's not worth putting on a squad because surely your second ruck is going to be averaging more than 40-odd. So, yeah, not worthwhile.
So he is going to get games because McIntosh is... I'm just looking at the injury list reported during the week. McIntosh to be confirmed. Yep. Simpson to be confirmed. Vardy is out for another week. He probably will come in. Walker out for another 5 or 6. So they haven't got much behind West and Blickabs. But,
true. True. But even once again, even if he does play, he's going to be averaging mid-40s. Not good enough. Even on your bench, it's not really worthwhile. You're better off trying to stash someone that's got upside and he doesn't really have upside.
So, Mullet probably interests me the most there. So, would you consider trading Mullet? Because he's just obviously increased in value and you might think that he's not all that... he's obviously had a great start to the season, got the Rising Star nomination. Would you sell high on Mullet or is our back so
not.
Valuable?
No, I wouldn't sell high simply because you're not going to get equal return now. This is a classic example of someone who, look, he's averaging just on 95 or just above 95, has now become back eligible. Now, to put that into perspective, Brendan Goddard, as I said, who averaged about 95, he went in our league number 3 overall. You look at someone like Bryce Gibbs, it's probably going to average around that 95, 100 mark as well. He went in the first round as well. My point is that these super premium backs are really... really valuable. Now, I don't think Mullet's going to average 95 for the year, but it's perfectly reasonable to predict that he might average 85, and that again is still quite valuable. So no one's going to give up value for Mullet. So you're better off just keeping him. it's probably a good idea to try and trade for him, but trading him away, unless you can get someone of equal value in return, which will be very difficult because no one's gonna, because he himself is not a big name yet. So to get someone of equal value in return, you're gonna have to ask for like a, I don't know, a Mark Murphy or a Scott Thompson
Wow,
or
really that
the,
high?
oh, I
Mark
don't,
Murphy.
well, tell me why not? If Mark Murphy's averaging 105 as a center, and if Muller at the moment he's averaging 95, and if let's just say he brings his average down to 90, just let's just say, then I would probably take Mullet. If Mullet averages 90 as a back,
Yeah, but Muller averaging 90 is not
I
all that.
agree.
I
I
mean,
agree.
well, then
But
again, I mean, Sam Gibson averaged well over 90 in the north side from a wing last year, and no one expected that really, especially
that's
given the
true.
amount of play games he played. So there are a lot of points to be made in that north back line, given the amount of time they spend chipping it around the back line. And I mean, it is noticeable that the teams he has played are pretty good. I mean, the Pies, the Cats, and the Swans have also got a lot of small forwards who take a lot of minding, but he's
Yeah, I
managed to
agree.
get off these men to get to score three very good scores. So, I mean, when the draw opens up for North, then you'd expect even better scores, you'd hope.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Right, well, we'll get on to the well, it's not a round review, it's a round preview, I suppose, since we're going through the AFL team sheets. Now, there won't be every game talked about, as I mean, I like with the coach's box to mention the player from at least every one player from every side. But in this case, we'll hang on. I'll just see if I can.
Sorry, I'm good.
That's all right. You're up.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll start with the Sydney Geelong game on the Friday. I'm not sure there's any interesting ins and outs from that side. Obviously, Varko, if you've got him, he's droppable in redraft leagues. What about for keeper leagues? I mean, he didn't really look like he was a natural dream teamer anyway when
Yeah,
he
I
was
think
on the
you're right.
park.
I think Varko, I mean, a lot of people jumped on him in regular Dream Team this year simply because he was so cheap, but his natural game is not conducive to Dream Team scores. He's one of those players whose real life impact on a game far exceeds his fantasy impact, and so he looks like someone that even when he's flying, he's going to average 60-ish, perhaps 65. So I don't think that's worthwhile keeping. So I mean, you can I think he's worthwhile dropping now.
Now I'll get on to the Hawthorn game. Of course, we do want a lot of Hawk talk in this show. We've really been I've been missing the Hawk talk with you, Vamsi. So we wanted to talk about Luke Hodge. Now I believe he's still listed as a centre. No,
No,
he is a
he's a
back.
bat.
He is a
He's a
back
bat.
in.
I've got him,
Okay,
yeah.
you do have him. Yes. Now, if you were trading Hodge at this stage again, I mean, is that what is his trade value? I mean, he's selling high on Hodge. I mean, because he is injury prone.
He is.
Where would
I
you?
agree.
I mean, would you be able to get him for Gibbs for him direct swap, or is he that high?
Oh, look, I guess it's one little tip that you can often employ in these sorts of leagues when you're trading is that there's always some mad hawk supporter in your league. Okay, there's always one. I mean, I can tell you right now, there's a couple in my league. Anyway, and I'm not even including yourself. There's another one that's been trying to get Luke Hodge off me. My point is that whatever value Hodge has got right now, you can always play up to someone's their fandom, so to speak. So,
Yes.
Luke Hodge, he's an icon. He's an absolute legend. All Hawks supporters absolutely adore him. So you're probably going to be able to get a little bit more for him from someone that is a huge Hawks fan than you might be from someone that is not. So, if I was going to trade Luke Hodge, and I might have to, as I said earlier, because of the issues I've got in my forwards now, the first person I'm probably going to go to is my Hawks fan in my league and say, "Hey, what do you think?" Because they're probably going to be a lot more interested in getting him than someone else. So, in terms of what his value is, like I said, I personally wouldn't, if I had Gibbs, I wouldn't give him up for Luke Hodge. But if someone who was a Hawks fan had Gibbs, they almost certainly would. They'd probably say, "Oh, they're about as equal as each other, and I just want Luke Hodge on my side." So it all comes down to everyone's got a different sort of valuation on a player, not just from a scoring point of view, but from an emotional point of view as well. It's obviously more fun to cheer for someone on your fantasy team that you actually enjoy cheering for in real life as well. So what I would want for him, I'd want a premium midfielder, not Swan obviously, or Swan or Ablett, but I'd want someone from the next perhaps not the very next crop, probably not that Pendlebury range, but certainly one below that. I just think, even though despite his injury risk, if he's going to play, he's going to average around 100 as a back. That's very, very valuable.
So I can't remember where you drafted him, but you're saying he's a first.
I drafted him high-ish, and even then I copped a bit of flack because, and he would have gone much higher if he was going to start the season, but because he was already injured and he was going to miss the first couple games or so, even then I think it was probably round four, perhaps. I can't remember exactly, but it was still high, and I reckon if he was going to start round one, given his the back eligibility, he would have gone at the end of the first round, perhaps, certainly in the second round, I think. So yep. I'd want a similar sort of player in return.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. I mean, 117 across the first 3 weeks, that's the first 2 weeks. Mm. I mean, it is only two of those weeks that he has actually played, but I mean, obviously his numbers are inflated by that 135 last week, but if he can keep up anything like that.
I mean, Cashy, who's in our league, Casher, who some of you will know, won Supercoach a few years ago now. He wants Luke Hodge, and I'm probably gonna ask for Bartel in a little bit more, and see what he says.
All right. Also at Hawthorn, Liam Shields. He was one who has had a couple of lean years after cracking the DT ton in the premiership year of 08, I think it might have been.
A couple of years ago, actually. It was only a couple of years ago that he literally 2011, he averaged over 100, and he put up some huge, like for the first half of the season, the first 15 rounds, he was averaging like 110, 115 or something like that, and obviously slowed down in the second half. And then I think in 2000 or last year, he was a little bit injury interrupted. And this year looks to be starting off all right. I mean, he had that, was it? I think he was sub in the first game, was he?
Yes.
Yeah, and then he's gone 70 and now 108. But, I mean, you might be able to give us a better idea. I mean, last year he seemed to pick up a lot of sort of run with roles. Is he doing a similar sort of thing this year?
He is, but, I mean, he's played a run with role in the Eagles game against Gaff and tore him apart on the going the other way. And he spent a fair bit of time in the match on the weekend up against Swan. And, of course, we all know that Swan has zero defensive side of his game, and he managed to hurt him on the other way as well. So that seems to be the way they're using him. I'm a little bit skeptical about whether his form is better because Sewell isn't there. But
true.
But so if someone wants to sell high, how much would you be willing to put up for Shields? Where do you think his trade value is right now?
Oh, I don't think it'll be too great, to be honest with you. I mean, let's just say he might average. I mean, he's not going to average 100 again. I don't think he will playing that sort of role. He will. So he's probably at 85. Perhaps 90 midfielder. I mean, if you can get,
I would take 90 out of, well, 85 even as an average out of him. I'm an owner.
I think that's fair. I mean, so in terms of what would you want in return? I mean, if you can get a forward that averages, 85 in return or 80 in return, if you look at, I mean, tell me about this. What do you think about someone like Jared Blair? He'll probably average around the 80, 85 mark. I think a Jared Blair for Liam Shields, I reckon you'd do pretty well if you were giving up Shields.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I like both of those guys, actually.
I've got a real-life trade for you, though.
What's that?
How's this one? I don't know what Hawthorn have done. They've gone for all sorts of players, but they still haven't quite got their ruck situation sorted.
Hmm.
Tell me who says no to Bell Chambers for Liam Shields.
Yeah, I'm not sure Bell Chambers is a DT-er. I mean, he put in a 50 on the weekend. He's going to do that, and he is going to have games where Ryder takes the cudgel and dominates a game. And that's just. I mean, it is a ruck committee. To be fair, I'll just pause this while Vamsi goes off and answers a phone call. All right.
Sorry, Monty, I'm just on call at the moment.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
So where were we?
We were talking about Liam Shields and his, and you were talking about Jared Blair.
That's right.
I recall. So yeah, I think those two are
So Bell Chambers for Shields is what I was getting at.
That's right. So I think with Bell Chambers, it's a It's a matter of whether of what his standard deviation is. I'm thinking he's probably going to lose you a few league games with some poor scores, whereas someone like Shields is going to be a solid, dependable, although not spectacular, scorer in his position. So,
okay.
I mean,
what about not even fantasy related?
Not even fantasy related.
No, I'm talking about real life, Mike. Real life, mate.
Well, yeah. I think the Hawks have enough in the way of ruckman. I think they've invested enough time in Bailey. They have to get some reward on that. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay.
And of course Bell Chambers is going to be suspended for a couple of years because he was taking vitamins or something.
We'll see about that. We'll see.
Look, I really hope he injects himself into this week's game. That'll be really good. Just to round out the Hawk talk, this is nominally talking about a Hawk, but it's a general point with Brendan Rycross. Now, he's listed on the injury list at 6 to 8 weeks. How early is it that you would take a player like that? Rycross,
I'd have him now. I mean, once again, though, it really depends on your league settings. I mean, for example, in my league, we have quite a large bench. I mean, looking here, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We've got 8 people on the bench. Now, with 8 people on the bench, I would have drafted Whitecross. I mean, if he's available on your free agency list, I'd run to get him because he's someone that's a forward that can average 90. Now, I understand he probably, will start off a little bit slow and that sort of thing, but if he was a midfielder, it's a bit different. But he plays in a scarce position. He's got upside of, giving you scores of 90, 80 to 90 as a forward. Yeah, absolutely, I'd be picking him up.
Related, we'll go on to a different game now. It's not a different game. It's actually the same game, Hawthorn versus Fremantle, on the Saturday afternoon, the first game. So on the Fremantle side of that game, Matthew Pavlich is obviously out for 4 to 6 weeks after news came out that he was going to have Achilles surgery. He had also had Achilles surgery in the off season, so this is not a good sign. So he has been taken off the can't cut list on Ultimate Footy. So what circumstances would you actually cut him? I mean, is he cuttable?
I have him, so I'm gonna have to make this decision myself. I mean, not once again. It really. I mean, if you've got bench size of like 3 or 4, then it makes it tough. It really does. In ours we've got 8 people on the bench. It's going to be very unlikely I make the finals from this position. I've just got too many injuries probably right now, but I will try, obviously. But I guess, if I somehow do manage to scrape into the finals, he hopefully will be cherry ripe. So you can't throw him away. Someone will pick him up and just stash him. And if he gets good, you look like a goose. So, if he was out for 15 weeks, that's a different story. But out for 6 weeks, he's back by the, and then there's half a season to go, more than half a season to go. So you can't drop him, really. Achilles injuries, we've just seen Kobe Bryant, not do the same injury, but basically snap his Achilles. They are sort of notoriously difficult injuries to come back from, particularly if you are a little bit older. So I don't have great expectations for him even after he does come back. But, you can't drop a guy like that. I drafted him very, very high. I just have to hope that, if he does come back... well, he will come back, but when he does come back, he can give me an average of 80 to 85 or something like that. I'm probably not going to get the 100, which is what I was expecting from him. But, yeah, as I said, can't drop him.
All right, we'll get on to the Richmond and Collingwood game, and probably pretty much only Collingwood players want to talk about here because there's no change at Richmond and really no change in fantasy value for most of those players. But on the Collingwood side, there's a long injury list down there in Collingwood, and of course we're all very sad about that. But now, fantasy coaches who drafted Dane Beams in the first round have really been screwed this year. There's nothing but sadness for those guys because that's outside their control and it's not something that they couldn't really have... unless they had an inside word at the club, there was no real message that came out of it before the season started that Beams was... whatever it is wrong with him. There's all sorts of rumours flying around, of course, as these things always tend to do when you get high-profile players who don't appear very much and get mysterious injuries. But nevertheless, if you have him in your side and you think, I'm not going to win the premiership if I have him in my on my bench for so long. what is his trade value at? Where, how many cents in the dollar can you get for Dane Beans at this stage?
Well, you can't get 100 cents on the dollar, that's for sure, because he is someone that, you know, could have averaged 110, maybe even 115, and you're not going to get a Pendlebury in return. You're not going to get a Cochin in return. You know, what do you do if you can get a, I don't know, what would you do if you can get a Mark Murphy in return, someone who, you know,
oh, well, Mark Murphy, I'd do that every day, absolutely.
Yeah, I probably agree, but, you know, the guy that's got Mark Murphy, I mean, once again, look, you're not, there's no point in ever trading someone out when they're already out injured right now, because you're not going to get anything in return. No one's going to give up a sure thing. What's that saying? Something about a bird in the hand is worth more than, I don't know what the saying is, but something like
that.
Two
in the bush, that's right.
Okay.
Well, you should know that, Mamsie.
Humorous, very funny. But yeah, you're not going to get anything in return for someone that's already injured. So what you're better off doing, if you're concerned about them getting injured again in the future, which with Beams, it's, I guess it's possible, you wait for them to come. They'll have a game, a great game, then you sell and you might be able to get some value in return. So someone, you know, he comes back, hopefully scores 120 in the first round, you know, first game he plays, you probably don't want to trade him at that point. But if you are concerned about ongoing injury risk, that's the point that you trade him. Trying to trade him now, you're not going to get anything for him, you know. So, I mean, I agree. If someone was mad enough to give you Mark Murphy now, you know, take it and run, but that's not going to happen. You're not going to really get, you know, anything really in return for someone that's not currently playing.
I'm just looking at your team in one of our leagues that we're in and looking at the backs. Now, if so the owner of Dane, you don't own Dane Beams, do you?
No, I don't, no.
So if the owner of Dane Beams came to you and said, I would like to trade you Dane Beams for Hamish Hartlett, would you do that trade?
Yes. Because I've got Hamish Hartlett, Goddard, and Luke Hodge in my backs. And as you can see, my midfield is somewhat weak, okay? Mm. I'd probably wait a little bit too long to start drafting the better midfielders. So despite the fact that, I mean, I haven't really kept up to date with Beams in terms of how long he's out for, but if he was only out for potentially another couple of weeks, then I probably would do that trade. Because, like I said, I'd need a strong midfielder. I'm pretty deep in the backs. I've got those three guys I've just said. I've also got Harry O'Brien, who's, you know, playing a pretty fantasy, you know, friendly role. I've got Jaron Geary as well, who's a little bit up and down, but should be able to give me an average of 80. You know, I've got Lewis Stevenson, you know, average of about 60, or about 70. I've got, you know, Nathan Bock, who's yet to come back. I've got Sam Fisher. I've got David Myers. So I've got some reasonably okay guys, but, you know, having three studs in Goddard, Hartlett, and Luke Hodge gives me a little bit of leeway to trade one of those guys to fill out some holes elsewhere.
He is listed Beams as a quad and 1 to 2 weeks.
So yeah, I'd do that, no question.
Also at Collingwood, Luke Ball is listed as a test this week. He didn't make a selection with his knee, which obviously he's had off-season surgery on. So where is his trade value at the moment? Would you trade him for a fourth rounder? Is he that high, given that you've obviously taken that hit of the first 3 weeks of the season not having him in your side? Is it now the time to cash in and, you know, get a better value for him?
Nah, you're not going to get a fourth rounder in return. I mean, he's someone who, I mean, obviously he's coming off that, you know, that terrible injury. They typically say it takes a couple of seasons to get over it. So he's going to come back, and I say best case scenario, he's going to average around 90. Best case scenario. Mm. Now, you know, he might have another couple of injury niggles. I mean, he certainly hasn't come back as quickly as everyone thought he was going to come back. So somewhere along the line, he's had a couple of hiccups. So he's another one of those guys you're not going to get reasonable value for. He's not that valuable anyway, because he's a midfielder that averages about 90. So really, he's going to be a seventh, sixth, or seventh, best midfielder in a side, fantasy side, that is.
Yep.
So you're better off just waiting for him. Wait till he shows a couple of nice games and then sell high.
Now, what about Clinton Young? He's listed as 3 or 4 weeks with a hamstring, so he's obviously missed the first 3 weeks of the season already. His best season was 2007 with an 85. He managed 81 last year. Is he droppable? Because he's stinking up my bench in both of my leagues, and he looks like he's just about on the cusp for me.
Yeah, I mean, is he only a centre?
He is only a centre.
Yeah, in that case, I mean, you could consider it. Put it that way. Once again, it's very hard to comment because every league is different in the sense of how many centres are you starting, how many people are on your bench, and what's available on your free agent list. I mean, if you've got someone that can come in and contribute right away, then absolutely make the drop. But he's not someone, I think, you know, best case scenario, he was someone that was going to be probably borderline startable. Anyway, and if we know that he's got an injury history, so if you've got no one to pick up, by all means keep him. But if there's someone on the free agency list that you want, then that's someone I think is reasonable to drop.
Well, I'm just glad that seeing as, of course, I am a fantasy curse, that I was able to put it on Clinton Young, so that'll teach him for getting traded away from Hawthorn. On the St Kilda game, they of course are playing Essendon. Jack Nunes, I have him in a keeper league, and I think I got him fairly late in a keeper league. But I haven't liked the look of him this season. I think St Kilda's draw has been reasonably easy for the first part of the year, but I just wonder, especially in redraft leagues, whether he's actually even all that cut out for it at this stage of his career. I mean, I know St Kilda are committing to play the kids. You look at their back six, and it's Wright, Simpkin, Robertson. That's a very young and inexperienced back line. Gary Stanley Gilbert is their half back line. I mean, there's not too many games in that whole St Kilda. So, I mean, obviously, you look at the centre line, and it's Dal Santo, Hayes Fisher, but certainly in the back line, you just look at that side and you think, well, where are the old blokes? Where are the blokes who know how to play AFL standard football? I mean, some of these blokes are, I mean, Nathan Wright, I'd never even heard of him. Robertson, I mean, he got a DT ton last week, but I'm not sure that that's going to be sustainable. Anyway, so we're talking here about Nunes. He looks even droppable to me in a keeper league. I know he's probably going to be a very good player when he matures, but it's still a bit too early, and I'm not sure I can keep him on a bench for a couple of years to wait for him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it always comes down to, that's the age-old debate with keeper leagues, is do you try and win now, or do you try and build for the future? And there's a fine balance. If you try and win now and you go and, you know, trade away these potential future, you know, very good players for guys like Lenny Hayes or you know, some of these older guys, you're gonna, you know, in a season or two, you're gonna have a very poor side, really. Conversely, if you only stash kids and you only draft kids, you're gonna have to go through a few years of pain in order to get to a point where, you know, your team is competitive. And truth be told, most keeper leagues don't last that long. People lose interest and that sort of thing. So, you know, I think there's always a fine balance. I would always err on the side of winning now, because you never know what's going to happen in the future with your league. So don't go overboard and win at all costs now, but certainly err on the side of winning now. Someone like Nunes I drafted simply because he had back eligibility, and I've dropped him. So, like I said, in a redraft league, I think he's certainly droppable. In a keeper league, borderline. And once again, it comes down to how big your bench is, how many keepers you're going to keep, and if you've got other guys that, you know, but he's got back eligibility, and that's pretty valuable. And he is someone that's apparently got a bit of talent, and he looked all right in the preseason as well. So he might be someone that, when they do give him a pretty big chance, he could average 80 as soon as perhaps even next season. And if he's got back eligibility, that's very valuable. So I'd be tempted to keep him in a keeper league, but in a redraft league, definitely drop.
All right. Quick bomber talk. Dustin Fletcher, he was on the cusp of startability anyway, but he needs to be dropped, I would presume, in all leagues. Obviously, keeper leagues, you'd do it. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
he could play another 3 years, to be fair, but
I agree. But I mean, he's not really. I mean, certainly, like you said, in a keeper league, you don't need him, but in a standard league as well, he's going to be averaging somewhere between 50 and 60.
Yeah,
probably not good enough. Depends how big your bench is as well and how many backs you're starting, but that's probably not good enough. Maybe on a bench, but that's only if he gets back up to scores of around 65 or so. He had that terrible game last week from a fantasy perspective anyway, and that's brought his average back down. He'll probably average in that 65 range. I think that's worthwhile keeping on your bench as a back, just as a plug and start, you know, in case of an emergency. but
if your bench is that large enough that you can actually station
exactly above, exactly.
Yes, and I don't think we need to talk about Patrick Ryder. He's stashable. You certainly don't drop him. On the West Coast side of that game, the St Kilda play against him. So the next game is West Coast and Carlton. So Andrew Embley, who is probably more relevant for salary cap leagues, but he probably would have been picked up fairly late in drafts as a speculative pick. But if you were speculating on him, you would have lost your dough because he is out with a foot injury, I believe. So how droppable is Andrew Embley?
How long is he supposed to be out for?
Let me look that up. West Coast, he is out for 3 to 4 with his foot.
Yeah. Once again, very hard to comment without knowing how bench is. In our league, I would keep him. Having 8 on the bench, you can afford to keep him. He's someone that as recently as, not even just a year ago, was averaging 90. He's not going to... and even last year, he got injured early and then came back and did okay in the last few games of the season. So he is someone that, is he only centre eligible?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, maybe worthwhile, that would be not unreasonable to drop him in that case.
Yep.
It
is such a shame because he's got, the Eagles have got such a great draw to start the season. I mean, they've got the Blues, the Power, the Dogs, the Lions in that period where he's going to be injured. And then afterwards, the Roos, GWS, the Giants, Richmond and the Saints get leading up to the bye. So the first half of the year is very lucrative if you're an Eagles player. But yes, unfortunately, that particular gamble has not paid off for his drafters. So also at West Coast, now Callum Sinclair, again, probably one who's more relevant for salary cap leagues because it is on the bubble this week. But 68 in the game against Melbourne makes one think that, I mean, as a ruck and forward in this competition, as I believe he is, he is, again, putting up, that particular game, he put up a score which is barely startable in draft leagues, but
In standard size leagues, he's put up 68 against arguably the worst side of the decade. That's his upside. He's not going to come up against Melbourne each week. In reality, he's going to be putting up scores of between 40 and 50, and that's not startable in standard leagues. So I think he's worth dropping.
So I suppose it's reliant on how long you expect Nat Nui to be out for. He is listed as still 2 to 3 weeks with his groin.
Yeah.
It's a matter of whether you'd believe that or not.
Well, even that, even if Nat Nui does stay out with Cox fit, Callum Sinclair is going to play a secondary role. So I just don't think he's going to put up the scores that are going to be worthy of starting in a ruck position in your league.
A similar sort of question with Sam Rowe from Carlton. Now, with Cruiser out, that presents an opportunity for the likes of Sam Rowe to get more in the way of targets inside 50, and he certainly put in pretty much a similar score, mid-70s against more difficult opposition this week. So Hampson and Rowe are going to be starting in that same forward line now, and that's pretty much going to be the tall forwards for Carlton while Cruiser is out with Warnock in ruck, and he doesn't really play forward all that much. So is Rowe the great white hope for Carlton? Are they going to be, is he going to get most of the targets, for those long bombs inside 50 that Carlton love to do?
Well, I don't know when Hampson's coming back, but he's the big hope for them. They really do need him. And Rowe hasn't looked too bad, I must say. But I think he's going to give you that average of around 55 to 60. And similar to Sinclair in that, I think Rowe is probably, like you said, with Cruiser out now, Rowe's probably going to perhaps stay in the side a little bit longer than Sinclair might, but I don't think his score is going to be too much greater. So not really startable or worthwhile holding on to in redraft leagues anyway.
In the Gold Coast and Port Adelaide game, Jack Hutchinson is the one I wanted to talk about. He's, it was an interesting role he played on the weekend. They seemed to play, the Lions seemed to play two players through him. They would rotate Rockcliffe and who was it? McKeever through him. So, he's a player who can play small and tall, and they actually play, it was a bit hard to figure out where McKeever was playing because he was only ever really out forward. He is obviously a player who can play forward and back, but they seem to be giving McKeever, pretty much rotating him off the bench to forward, and when he wasn't on the field, then Rockliffe would rest forward. That seemed to be the structure there. So that meant that Hutchins was very busy keeping both of those guys occupied. So he still managed to get 13 touches and 8 tackles in that game. So I'm not sure that's sustainable. But,
yeah, exactly. And that's the key, is that he scored 73 and he put up 8 tackles. That's, you know, he might average 3 or 4 a game. So let's just say you take off 4 tackles there, take away 4 tackles, 16 points. And what does that come down to? Well, yeah, 57 or something. And that's the sort of scores that I'd expect from him. So not really worthwhile considering in redraft leagues.
And that, unfortunately, is where we had to leave the selection committee for this week because we had some terrible internet problems. We only got through about half the players. Sadly, that is all we had time for. We were going to be talking about Gray, Cassisi, Watts, O'Halpin, Tomlins, and many, many other players. Unfortunately, that's all she wrote. So that is it for this week, and hopefully the internet will treat us better next week. I apologise for that, but I'll have to get someone, if not Footylover 18 or Dan Fisher, I'll have to get someone else. And hopefully we'll see you guys next week on the selection committee. Thanks. Bye.